You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey, White Sox fans and Birmingham Barons fans. My name is Brett Valentini, hosting Sox Pop on the Farm, podcast number 48. We're doing something a little different this year. Let me launch into a quick intro. For those of you who might be new to Southside Sox, Birmingham Barons fans, minor league junkies, whatever it is, I'm Brett Valentini. I run Southside Sox. I've been doing that since 2018. Southside Sox is the longest running, best, most analytical, most heartfelt, cool, you know, whatever. Insert whatever good, please be gentle, good adjective, and that's what we are. We've been around a long time. We have definite space in the minor league area where we run the most comprehensive nightly minor league updates. I dare say more comprehensive even than the White Sox themselves. We have our own photographers shooting games. In the off season, we run a top 100 prospects. We're pretty devoted to the minors as well, even though our name really reflects White Sox coverage. And to that end, it's been a while since we've had these regular farm podcasts. We sort of trailed off mid-season. The minor leagues kept playing, but we stopped doing podcasts. So I'm taking a different approach this year, really trying to go for subject matter experts with all of our affiliates. You've already heard from Jonathan Lee. He's our guy in Charlotte. He's covered the Knights for years and years. That was our first preview we rolled out. And It's pressure, and it's going to be hard to have this carry through all four affiliates, but sticking with the Jonathan theme, and no offense to Jay Lee, but we're really dialing it up here with the Birmingham Barons, because you cannot get a better subject matter expert than a president and GM of a team, and that is Jonathan Nelson, who is going to be joining me this year for some reports on the Birmingham Barons. Thank you so much for being with me, Jonathan. This is going to be some fun.
No, thank you. Appreciate it. It will be a lot of fun, and just look forward to the monthly visits for sure.
Now, no one really wants to be told in class, hey, stand up and introduce yourself to the rest of the class. But Jonathan, could you stand up and introduce yourself to the rest of the class?
Oh, yeah. I mean, first and foremost, you know, I'm a lifelong White Sox fan, and people always say, well, you've got to be a White Sox fan. No, I mean, technically, yeah, I guess I do. But at the same time, no, I mean, this goes back to certainly the 70s and 80s and certainly, you know, having a deeper appreciation, and especially in recent years, for the 83 team that won the AL West back in the day, captured the hearts of so many Southside fans. And for me personally, I mean, you know, to work with the Britt Burns of the world, the Vance Laws, Rich Dotsons, all those guys have been sort of a full circle type thing. Yet at the same time, you know, I started with the Barons in 1993 as an intern. And so I did an internship with an East Coast Hockey League team, parlayed that into an internship with the Barons, worked with the Barons in 93 when Francona was our manager the first year with us. Followed it up in 1994 when Michael Jordan was a Baron. So it's hard to believe that, you know, that I'm still doing baseball when you get a championship ring your first year in 93, working with Terry Francona, then followed up with an infamous season with Michael Jordan in 94, and I'm still, you know, going strong. I worked with the Barons for 4 years. Went to actually work now with the divisional foe. I worked in Detroit for a year in a Tiger Stadium with the Tigers in 97. Then I came back as assistant general manager with the Barons in 98, and then ultimately promoted to GM in August of 2004. I've been in this position ever since.
Well, you know, full disclosure, I was already jealous going into the podcast. Now I'm super jealous. Of course, 83 is a sweet spot for me. Last time, I believe, because I'm a professional, last time I cried over a baseball game, Tito Landrum. Broke my heart and brought tears to my eyes.
No, so no, I mean, you know, it's Britt Burns was our pitching coach the first 3 years, I think, 3 or 4 years we were at Regents Field here. And, you know, ironically, the night we ended up, you know, 2013, our inaugural season at Regents Field, not to get too off topic, but we ended up winning the championship, mm-hmm. a dream season in the truest sense. So many great things about it. But we ended up we ended up beating the Cubs affiliate, the Tennessee Smokies, in the divisional round, and they had Chris Bryant, Javier Baez, and several others on their team that went on to Major League fame. But we ended up playing the Mobile Bay Bears in the championship series, and we were up 2-0. Then next thing you know, they evened it up, and they were going for a three-peat. They had Andy Green, who would become a major league manager. Yep. Obviously, he's a major league personality, and several other future major leaguers, and they were past major leaguers on that team. So they were stacked to a degree. So we went into game five on a Sunday night, and lamenting, and I was fuming because that's my hometown, and I knew I was going to have to hear it from my friends and family if we lost. But I brought up to Burnsy that night, I said, I'll be honest with you, I brought up the 83 series, and I brought up Tito Landrum to him. And I told him that, not until finally 2005 did I get over Tito effing Landrum. And he goes, I've never gotten over it. I never will. But, ultimately that was a Saturday afternoon that, unfortunately, I still recall vividly as well.
All right. I had noticed maybe off season a year or so ago that Sergio Santos was managing in the New York Yankees system. I thought, wow, that's sort of cool. Definitely not the cliche you don't hear necessarily about relievers being managers. That's different. And I figured, wow, he could really do something good as a manager. And to my excitement and surprise, I learned in the offseason that Sergio Santos, one of your former players, is now managing the Birmingham Barons. During my brief time as a beat writer in Chicago, covered Sergio, and really not a more genuine, strong, fun, thoughtful guy. It probably speaks to my longevity as a beat writer that he was a guy I would run into for covering a 500 team. I'd run into the clubhouse and talk to him first about games. That probably wasn't maybe the best news decision on my part, but just a stand-up guy that I imagine you're sort of thrilled to have running the show there. But your initial impressions of Sergio, I guess, as now manager.
Yeah, and Sergio brings to the table certainly a unique perspective. When he was drafted, I guess, by the Blue Jays, I mean, he was drafted as a shortstop.
Yep.
And then ultimately converted to being a relief pitcher. So when he was here, he'll tell you that he basically spent a cup of coffee at each level of the White Sox system, and they rushed him through the system en route to the South Side. So when he was here, I do recall when he was here, he certainly had electric stuff, but he was not here long. And this is the first coaching staff, and this starts to show you how old I guess I am these days, is that this is the first coaching staff where all the coaches were legitimately players, while I've been serving in this capacity. So John Eli, our pitching coach, he was a pitcher for us back in, I think, 2009. And I think that's the same year that that Sergio was quickly, ran through the system as well. And then, of course, Nicky Delmonico, was with us, several years here at the ballpark at Regents Field. And then, of course, he was our hitting coach last year. So, thrilled to have him. And I know Sergio brings a different level. I think there's so much, over the years, we've had so many great managers and so many great personalities. And there's no really rhyme or reason. But I think that when you get younger managers that are so close to their playing career, like a Sergio, and all of our coaches, for that matter, I think there's clearly a unique connectivity and relate, being able to relay to the players and really have a good feel for the clubhouse. And so I think that I'm really excited to see when they show up. I know they're going to be here. They arrive next Monday, April 1st at 6:40 to be exact. And so that's sort of the end of the world as we know it. And we'll start the week. We have certainly several workouts, scheduled. And then, of course, we chalk the lines and have opening day here at Regents Field on April 5th.
April Fool's Day, to get everybody together. That is just ripe for the potential abuse. It's going to be interesting. Oh, I'm sure it's an exciting day every year in Birmingham. We're not talking about a ton of personnel here on this first, even though this is sensibly our season preview. We're going to be a little more esoteric with this podcast, but a guy who came to the team, a real plum prospect, really young guy, and the future seems really wide open for him all the way up to the major leagues is Edgar Caro. Your initial impressions, I think I got it written down here, 31 games with you. So he did get some decent time. Pretty enormous talent, can sort of do, seems like just about anything. Your impressions on sort of getting to know Edgar as a player after he came over at the trade deadline?
Yeah, you know, saw him both as a visitor and then obviously, you know, when he was traded from the Angels to the White Sox. You know, and the thing about White Sox fans, I know that they are so knowledgeable and so, you know, heavily invested in wanting to certainly, gather up all the information and about all these players. And I'm not, and I'm also skittish too about wanting to sort of over deliver in my sort of, you know, what I've observed. I could tell you from everything from clubhouse to just, you know, honestly what he brings to the table from catching a game. Mm-hmm. To me, there's White Sox fans should be very excited about what they have. And I think that even more so is that, you know, the timeliness of his, you know, tracking too, coming back for some fine tuning at this level in this league. The way he, you know, called a game, and I'm not going to be one, I've never scouted players or anything like that. I'm not evaluating, but just my observations, clearly being, you know, working in baseball for over 30 years, you know, pretty good sense, but you know what, the way he handles the pitching staff and all that, very impressive. And I think the White Sox fans should be very excited about what his future brings. Now, obviously, you know, we've seen so many prospects come and go and some, you know, just, you know, sort of top mm-hmm. out at certain levels and not make it, you know, to the big league level with any kind of success. But, you know, very excited to see what the future has for him as what this season, the way this he's going to roll out this season and ultimately the journey that he's going to hopefully get, you know, to Chicago.
Mm-hmm. Well, a guy who's one step closer to the majors, and again, things can always go awry, but you hope that certainly with this surprise rebuild that the White Sox are in, again, you certainly hope that a number of personnel at every level here in the system are going to see some really good sunshine time on the South Side because, well, the White Sox need it, just frankly. But Colson Montgomery, a guy one step closer in Charlotte now. You had two stints with him. Again, still a fair handful of games, I think about 51 total over a couple of years, the Project Birmingham experiment, which we may circle back to later on in this podcast. But then, of course, last year, a little bit more solid time where he is blossoming as a guy who could hit for power. I mean, sort of do it all. I know there's maybe a little bit of defensive question still, but a guy who just seems very much on a trajectory to the major leagues, potentially maybe as soon as late in 2024. Impressions of Colson, and then maybe also what you may have seen between that very first instance with the Project Birmingham situation and then last year.
Yeah, I mean, obviously his tools are off the charts. I mean, in the White Sox, you know, when they drafted him from just an overall potential standpoint, I mean, he brings everything to the table. And it will be very interesting to see his progress this season. Obviously, the next step for him is Triple-A. And I'm glad that he's going to continue to make that step. And hopefully that, you know, he'll get off and stay healthy, most importantly, and be able to continue to grow and develop. And then, you know, ultimately, like a lot of the top prospects the White Sox have done, you know, throughout the system over the years is they've always invested heavily, you know, at all the different levels. But I think that Birmingham is certainly a track record where whether it be Frank Thomas or Mark Burley or even Joe Creedy over the years, that they sink the bulk of their time in the development at this level. And Triple-A, no matter what the location has been, you know, they've stayed there, but they haven't invested as long as it was at Double-A. So it'll be interesting to see what he does. I mean, clearly he is regarded by all, you know, major league evaluators and all the experts as one of the top prospects in all of Major League Baseball. So very excited to see. I know that the comps are out there by Corey Seager and all that kind of stuff. And certainly that's very exciting. But, you know, I'm also going to tap the brakes on all those kind of comps, and really just, you know, give him a pass. And meaning, and you know, I think it's what White Sox fans should do is really not really worry about comps and all the other rankings that come along with it, but ultimately just, you know, pay attention to his progress and just be the biggest, you know, supporter of him, because I think that, you know, once he gets to Chicago, hopefully he's going to be able to settle in and make that natural transition and really, you know, continue the legacy of what White Sox shortstops have been, you know, since, you know, Chico Carrasco, Luis Aparicio, and going back further, Luke Appling, all those great ones that they have, and hopefully we'll add his name to that great legacy.
Yep. I'm a White Sox fan because of Chico Carrasco. That was my dad's guy. So, you know, and of course you have no choice when your dad's a certain fan, you know, in most cases you sort of have to follow. And I followed. Okay, I'm going to throw a curveball. I'm not going to do this to you very often, Jonathan, but I'm going to throw you a curveball. I'm going to ask you about one more guy because I sort of forgot about him. Don't know why. He's been doubted at every level, seems like a guy who wasn't necessarily, he's going to, you know, flame out. He wasn't, his game wasn't going to translate from an extraordinary college career into the professional, but you know, every time he hits like balls 400 feet, you know, he's sort of disproving that. He's still not a guy who's considered as highly regarded, of course, as Edgar or Colson, or a number of other guys, but it's Tim Elko. He just seems to be, I mean, I call him like a Paul Bunyan-esque kind of figure. He seems to be have some great leadership, seems to be a guy you just want on your team, and whether that translates to the major league level or not, it just seems like this guy takes on challenges, just sort of, you know, eats them for lunch, and it you probably had to be a little bit tickled to have him end what was an extraordinary season last year, a real sort of prove it season in Birmingham.
Yeah, I mean, clearly, you know, his level of success when he was at Ole Miss is off the charts, very highly regarded. The scout who ended up scouting him, Warren Hughes, I've known for years since I was in, admittedly, high school and when Warren played baseball at the University of South Alabama. And I actually ran into Warren earlier this season. My son works with the University of Alabama baseball team, so I ran into him at a Crimson Tide baseball game. And we talked about Tim Elko, and I told him that I could not have been more impressed with when Tim's short time with us last season here. He is a class act on and off the field. He brings it. He is a workhorse, and, you know, I'm very excited to see, you know, he's going to be an older player, but you're right. Every level that he was at last year in 2023, he excelled. But I think that what he brings to the table, you know, clearly is, you know, an unbelievable potential when it comes to offensive prowess. But I think his leadership and overall quality in leadership in the clubhouse is something that cannot be discounted. Very impressive. I'm hopeful that when they get off the plane on Monday that he'll be here, because he brings a lot to the table. I know that we have a lot of Ole Miss fans in this market, but more than anything, I think that he's a quality person that brings that sort of that intangible leadership to it, and then backs it up with his play on the field as well.
Yeah. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Come on back with the second half that's going to be maybe exploring more of the full studio space of the podcast. Hang with us for a minute or two. Promise we'll be back with a little bit more Birmingham Barons information in just a sec. Hey, White Sox fans and Birmingham Barons fans and minor league baseball fans. My name is Brett Valentini. I'm here lucky enough to be hanging out talking Barons baseball with the subject matter expert in Birmingham. It's Jonathan Nelson, GM and president of the team, kind enough to make some time for us and illuminate us a little bit as we head into the 2024 professional season. Now, we're both longtime White Sox fans. I've been covering the Sox. Well, geez, I got my first piece in the World Series program, so I date back a while with the White Sox as well. But as an outsider, as opposed to yourself, you know, I may think of myself as some sort of expert, or I know all the nuances and stuff, but I think there's a lot of stuff that you can share with us over the course of these that could really illuminate what some of the experience is, both from your perspective, through your eyes, but also maybe through player eyes as well. One thing that I always sort of find fascinating, we've already talked about Edgar Caro, of course, Jake Eater, a number of other guys last year who came in season to the Barons. You've got players who may be having some of their very first stateside seasons in Birmingham or very soon after getting to Birmingham. We've got a lot of adjustments, whether it be culturally or just professionally. These guys, by and large, are still very young men and you have to be just a, it's not just a baseball decision situation with you there. I'm just curious what the process is from your end. Say when a player is traded in midseason, you got to welcome in, you got to get them acclimated, make them feel, you know, welcomed, comfortable, attend to some real practical, you know, needs for them. You know, what's that process like? I'm sure it's, you know, stressful for everyone, including yourself, but, you know, how do you and sort of the Birmingham team handle those things?
Well, I mean, whether it be, you know, when they arrive from spring training or whether it be they're traded during the season or this is signed, you know, just, you know, the, you know, shifting from, yeah, from Winston-Salem or Charlotte here, is that, you know, most important thing is we want every player that comes through here and coach too, but we want them all to, for Birmingham to be their best experience. You know, this is not their ultimate, you know, final destination. We don't want it to be. We want it to be just obviously a climb on the ladder to ultimately get to Chicago. But you know, I, you know, clearly introduce ourselves, make sure that, you know, they're taken care of, that they feel comfortable, that the transition is as smooth as possible, because obviously, you know, moving from city, moving an apartment, whatever it is, that we make sure that they're comfortable, familiar with everything, and if there's anything that we can do to make their existence here the best, that's what we want. And, you know, over the years when we've had players, whether it be Bobby Jinks, Chris Getz, whoever it was over the years that certainly went on to have, you know, great careers, even if they topped out in AAA or went back to single A, we just want their experience here in Birmingham to be the best. And that's, you know, when players show up, you know, via trade or being assigned here or just out of spring training, what I love is just to see their reactions, because when they come to Regents Field, they come to a ballpark that not only satisfies the team needs and what they need to accomplish to continue to prepare themselves for each game and throughout the course of the season, but it's one that provides a really fun, inviting, friendly environment for them to really enjoy playing games and showing up every day to work at.
It might be a topic for another podcast, but in the future, but when you talk about the slate of four ballparks affiliated with the White Sox, I'm not sure you're going to find any better on the astounding park in Charlotte to what you have in Birmingham, and really even at the single A level, it's extraordinary. So I'm sure it's a thrill, thrill to step on that field, much less play on that field. So related, perhaps, and I know, you know, the role of GM for a minor league team is, of course, different than it is for Chris Getz in the majors and that, but there still is some practical considerations. The White Sox are, you know, are making the moves. They're moving the chess pieces, but there's also times where, you know, as much as the White Sox are anticipating, you've also got to let them know, hey, like, we're about to be out of catchers. I mean, how does the process go when, you know, you're on the red hotline to the White Sox saying, hey, you know, listen, we're seeing something up ahead that we may need some help with. You know, how can you help us with that? I mean, I imagine they're pretty good and malleable when it comes to getting you the personnel you need. But you know, those dry spells do come up in seasons.
No doubt. And I think that, you know, it's always a work in progress. And the great thing about the White Sox is that they've always been open. And it goes from everybody, from the farm director for Paul now, who's joining the White Sox this year, to Chris Getz when he was the farm director, to Jerry Reinsdorf. I mean, they've all been welcome. They've all been open. They've always answered a call. They've answered a text, whatever it was, immediately. And they recognize, I mean, it's a relationship. And whether it be, you know, players on the field or whether it be being active and, you know, for our players to visit, you know, kids at Children's Hospital just beyond, you know, center field here at Regents Field, they're all on board, and they recognize that it's got to be a great relationship. I mean, we've had the longest relationship of any affiliation in White Sox history, and so we're very proud of that. And, you know, it's, you know, whether it be, you know, when we designed the ballpark and worked with Buddy Bell when he was the farm director, mm-hmm. I mean, we've always had a great active, you know, relationship. And, you know, the White Sox certainly have always had a hand, whether it be obviously in providing us help when we've had that playoff push that we wanted to try to win a championship, mm-hmm. or whether it be the overall design of the ballpark. Whether it be the clubhouse facilities, the workout facilities, the training room facilities, whatever it is, it's just always been a quality dialogue. And I think it's always been a two-way street. And that's very important for us to have a very respectful and quality relationship with everybody.
And whatever the other reasons are, you were also selected, Birmingham was, a couple of years back for the what was sort of a cutting-edge sort of thing Chris Getz came up with, which is Project Birmingham, now a season in between that experience. Sort of came as a surprise to people. It's nothing that was announced like in April. And then we didn't even know how it was going to play out. We figured maybe it was just going to be more focus on the collegiality of it, the honor of sort of being considered in that group, and all of the drilling and coaching from the best of the system. But then it turned out that a lot of guys got trotted into like sort of a ton of games, which I think surprised a number of people. But in reflecting, it hasn't been that much distance, but, you know, just from sort of the thrill and honor of being able to host that experience to, you know, just how it played out. What are your thoughts looking back now?
Well, I mean, clearly that was a all-star White Sox prospect developmental period that August a couple of years ago. Yeah. Very exciting. I know that the eyes of the South Side, of White Sox fans, we're all upon Birmingham, and I know that, you know, clearly, you know, like any other trade that you would have in baseball, is that time will tell. But it was very exciting for us to see, you know, them all interact. And I think it's important. I one thing that can't be discounted, I know that, you know, people don't put too much value in the wins and losses when it comes to the minor leagues. Yet at the same time, I think that, you know, creating a winning culture and creating relationships, playing together, is highly underrated. And I think being able for all of them to be in a share a clubhouse and work together so intently, so close for that period of time, hopefully will prove to be, you know, very beneficial for White Sox fans for the White Sox moving forward. I think the one thing too that never really got a lot of traction is that, you know, with the Major League Baseball draft being moved to the All-Star break, you know, the White Sox, you know, the last 3 years, you know, we're not able to have any kind of draft mini camp in Arizona just because of the weather conditions and all that, as you would imagine. So the first 2 years, because the schedule worked out here in Birmingham with us being on the road, we hosted it. The first year was, you know, 10 days. The next year was, you know, just over a week. And again, I think that shows the great relationship that we have, the Barons organization, and how much trust they have here in Birmingham, of not only the ballpark, the organization, but just overall the accommodations, and to make sure that this is a facility in a city that can really, you know, satisfy the overall needs. And it was fun because to be able to see that, that was, you know, even though that was didn't have the great name of Project Birmingham, the draft mini camp, and that's what the first time we met Tim Elko. And amongst all those, and Colson Montgomery, all those guys. So it was really fun to see that, and I think part of it too, not only was it about, you know, the proper sort of instruction here on the field those days, it was pretty intense. But for me, I mean, I gave them there's a Negro Civil League Museum just beyond the left field fence here at Regents Field that certainly showcases and highlights the great heritage of Negro League baseball here in Birmingham. And I got to give them a tour and explain not only the history of the Barons, but the Black Barons and just baseball here in Birmingham. So it was more than just, you know, developmental training. It was also sort of a page out of the book of some history as well. Mm-hmm. So that was pretty cool. Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm going to go slightly off script here because something you said really, in addition to what you just said about the tour of the Negro League Museum there, which we're going to get to, if not in this podcast, in future ones, is wins and losses. Again, from an outsider, you know, we can pretend, oh, yeah, we know, you know, it means everything. It means nothing. I've been a believer for a long time, and I think something you just said, which is, hey, you still want to win. You want to develop wins. If you're going to go out on the field, you'd rather win than lose. It's not necessarily the end all. Of course, it is at the major league level, but not necessarily in any developmental stage. But there is something to be said for getting those wins. You certainly don't want to go out and have a losing season. How do we as fans at the South Side focused on, you know, winning divisions or getting into the playoffs, you know, how should we temper our, you know, enthusiasm for winning, you know, with, you know, also the development? And how do you even juggle that? Because you don't want to see, even if guys are, say, learning, you just don't necessarily want to see loss after loss either. How do you balance that?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question. And you know, I think for us is that, you know, we want to be competitive. And I think it's so important for players to be in a position to where, you know, in critical situations, those pressure situations, so they're familiar with it when they do have the opportunity at the big league level. So I think, you know, creating that winning culture, you know, can, you know, throughout the system at every step, you know, continues to put yourself in a position. And it's like anything else. Once you taste that that victory, you want to continue to taste it. So I think more than anything is that I think that when it comes to the development of these prospects and the development of players throughout the system, I think that there all should be also be patience. Some are late bloomers. I know that when Luis Robert, you know, came through Birmingham, he was a man child. I mean, he was the greatest player I'd ever seen at this ballpark and the second greatest player or one of the top two greatest players I've ever seen in my Barons existence. The other one was Mike Cameron back in the mid 90s. And so there was an expectation for me, for him to all of a sudden, you know, be the second coming of Mike Trout in Chicago. But, you know, I know that there's been a little bit of, you know, steps forward and steps back and injuries and all that kind of stuff. But I think more than anything, you know, having that temperament of being patient and when it clicks at the big league level, it's going to click. And I think that White Sox fans should be very excited about some of these players that they've accumulated, not only draft wise, but certainly, you know, trade wise, because I think that the White Sox are setting us up for something really good, hopefully in the future. But of course, there's so many things that could happen between now and then. But it's a very, very good time to be optimistic about what's going to lie ahead for the White Sox.
The touchstone for me, Jonathan, with you is in an editor role back when we were working with Sports Illustrated. The first time I saw or heard from you, at least, was when Sam Sherman had rung you up and asked you a whole bunch of questions during a pandemic and asked you about me. I'm not going to ask you about music yet. He made it very clear he's got to ask you about music as well. That's Sam. But, you know, that was, I don't know if that's the low point in your career with the Barons, but that had to be an extraordinarily difficult season. And, you know, but really from there, hopefully there also have been some good memories coming out of what the 2020s are becoming. And just wonder if there's a couple things that, you know, might stand out to you so far in these just few years since the pandemic that's stood out to you.
Yeah, I mean, you know, clearly, 2020 affected everybody, and certainly, you know, obviously, it was very sobering, and not only sobering, but just, you know, just glad that we're sort of, you know, continuing to take steps away from it. Obviously, you know, some people hit more than others, and it's tragic. Yet at the same time, as each season goes by, you know, last year was truly the first season that resembled a normal season from beginning to end. You know, in the previous, you know, in 2021 and 2022, there were series in this league that were canceled because of COVID. You know, it was being affected by that. But last year, none. And so this year, I think more than anything, you know, we have new ownership here. Diamond Baseball Holdings, we're very excited about. And I think that with moving forward with 2024, I think that the way the team lines up with the caliber of new players coming in, along with some returning, very exciting stuff. But when it comes to some of the players and teams that we've had over the years, you know, when we moved, I compartmentalize everything into basically, you know, certain areas. My first 4 years with the Barons, my time as assistant general manager, my time as general manager at the Hoover Met, and then, you know, being here at Regents Field. And, you know, all of our years here at Regents Field, you know, have been very special because it's been a major part of the revitalization of downtown Birmingham, a contributor for the overall economic development, but even more so the confidence of this city. But seeing some of the players come through here, again, you know, last year you brought up Tim Elko earlier. You know, he was quite a treat. You know, you always have a blend of players. We've always had, you know, a blend of great players here. But he is a guy that gets it on so many different levels, that has a good temperament, that is it's exciting to watch. And one of the funniest things I ever saw last year was, at the end of the season, Biloxi, you know, a smaller outfielder that was speedy, ran into him, had a collision at first base. And it seemed like he bounced off and landed about 20 feet further, whereas Tim Elko just stood there and didn't seem phased because he's the size of a condominium, whereas this guy was the size of a puck tent. I mean, it was, you know, so he brings a different sort of mentality and overall sort of, you know, presence to the game. But, you know, over the years, I mean, you know, Larice Robert obviously was great. And you know, Eloy was phenomenal. Mm-hmm. He was here back in, I think, 2018. And so we've been very fortunate. You know, Romy Gonzalez, you know, pros mm-hmm. pro. I mean, he really developed onto the prospect map when his mm-hmm. 1 year here in Birmingham. So, you know, you hate to start to single out guys because mm-hmm. there's so many guys that you could name that, you know, that's clearly made it to Chicago, that excel at the big league level. And there's so many guys that, you know, sort of, you know, either top off in AAA or here. But they were great guys because they were, you know, great to work with, pros, and wanted to be a contributor and impact so many people and made, you know, fans happy here at Regents Field.
We're going to circle back to Romy and Regents Field as a hitter's park or pitcher's park in a future podcast. I do want to follow up with was another thing that came out of the pandemic season, I believe, I don't know how directly, but I think it definitely came out of it, was the different structure of how series are run now. We basically have like a week against an opponent. And how is that, you know, is that to your benefit running a team? Is there a drawback in that it's just does it challenge attendance more because you've got, you know, an opponent maybe six times in a row? How does that work compared to what it used to be, which I think was more traditional, a 2-3-4 game series structure?
I think by all accounts, whether it be players on the field, coaches, managers, or whether it be us as a front office, I think it's a win-win because, one, you know exactly what your schedule is, and I think a built-in off day is incredibly beneficial for the team. And it's also very helpful instead of chopping up the season in five-game series or 3 or 4-game series like there used to be. And the thing about these six-game series, not only do you know what you have, and I think the guys like it because they know that they want to schedule a tee time on Monday, but it cuts down significantly on travel. And, you know, the challenging part, you know, it doesn't hurt us to play Rocket City for 6 games in a row or any specific opponent for 6 games in a row. It doesn't really matter. It might be beneficial if they have a top prospect or a top personality as a manager or something like that, but it doesn't hurt us at all. Where it becomes challenging is that when you have that one homestand where you play 12 out of 13 days, you know, because that's it's very difficult. It's almost for me, you know, that's basically a half month, and it's almost a culture, you know, shifting, you know, sort of period, because I have a routine I do every day on a homestand, and to do it 12 out of 13 days is quite an ordeal. But nonetheless, I mean, you know, back in the old days, you used to have two of those, and that was very difficult to muster that up twice a year. But to do only one now is not that bad. But still, it's still a very, very heavy lift from a mental, not a physical, but a mental standpoint to sort of get through that, especially if you have some rainy days.
Okay, I'm making a mental note here. Be very gentle to all of the affiliates, including Jonathan, when at the end of those types of stretches.
Right.
Be very delicate and extremely polite. Okay, I've got one more of these producer goofy things to try and do here. I don't even know if the information is correct, but of course, opening day is coming up. Open at home this year. Immediate opening day night. You know, tricks, first homestand tricks, anything new necessarily at the ballpark we want to talk a little bit about for 2024?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the great thing is opening at home this year with a 3-game series, perfect, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. You know, we're typical that we're going to have fireworks every Friday night. Mm-hmm. This year we have fireworks on Friday, we have fireworks on Saturday, and then we'll polish it off, hopefully, weather permitting. We have a great, you know, the stars align, and we have a great sunny afternoon, and people want to come out in Birmingham, and they want to see their Barons play. And so we'll have a family day that day. And then, of course, you know, we have so many great promotions. I know that fans love the bobbleheads. We have a Colson Montgomery bobblehead coming up this season. People will want to pay attention to. It's funny because those nights, it's like any other ballpark you see, is that, you know, within 5 minutes of the gates opening, you'll see a Colson Montgomery bobblehead on eBay. you know, you'll see it, you know, with the field in the background. It's a pretty funny thing. But, you know, we're going to dip our toe into the NIL world, and we're going to have Alabama quarterback Jalen Milroe for an appearance in May. So we have a lot of great promotions this upcoming year. that, you know, whether it be a Hawaiian shirt giveaway or whether it be a variety of entertainers giveaways that are going to be littered throughout the course of the season that, that, you know, people are accustomed to. And of course, we're like any other ballpark too, is that we like to introduce fun and unique, you know, food items each year, you know, that, that resonate with our community. And we're always going to serve the best and the coldest, you know, craft Birmingham craft beer here as well. So Thursdays take a life of their own. I always say that it's sort of like Vegas, you know, what happens at Legionsville
on Thursdays.
So it's those are always fun. And especially at the beginning of the season when everybody, you know, has saved up and ready to lock and load for Thursday.
Okay, for those of you watching on YouTube, please, I'm not trying to frustrate you. You can't click on the link that's running at the bottom of the screen, but I do promise we're going to post on Southside Sox with all of these podcasts, and there will be a link there to click to find your tickets. If you're not just going to the Barons website directly, if you want to go through Southside Sox, listen, selfishly, I prefer that. Jonathan might not agree, but you will be able to click that and get right to buying your tickets, checking out all the promotions, checking out what's coming up. Certainly in June, we're going to have some fun stuff to talk about as well, Jonathan. But we got our first podcast under our belt. We'll have a lot more field action to talk about next time around in, I think, a couple weeks or so. But I appreciate you doing this and getting this kicked off right.
Thanks, Brett. Really appreciate it. It's fun, and I look forward to more.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening, reading, watching, as always. Tune in on the Barons. I mean, this year, we got to pay even more attention than usual to our organizational talent because it's going to be a little difficult on the Southside. This is a spoiler alert, but it is going to be a tough season. So pay even more attention to Southside Sox coverage of the minor leagues and, of course, to the Barons up close and personal in Birmingham. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll be back, Jonathan and I, a couple weeks or so, and we'll have our podcast running out with every affiliate throughout the year.